Hey everybody, and welcome to NWR Connectivity, episode 296. I'm your host, Neil Ronahan. Joining me, as always, John Raritan.
Hello, I'm here.
And also with us is our wonderful most week's editor, Alex DeFreitas.
Hi, Mario Tennis 64 is better than Mario Tennis Aces.
I was thinking before the Nintendo 64 games came out on Nintendo Switch Online, that I was like, you know what, like maybe Aces is a little different because Aces is more of like a fighting game in sports clothing as opposed to a sports game.
Yes.
And that, like, I don't hate Aces. I think Aces does cool things that ultimately do not work for me as well.
Right.
I did not expect to play Mario Tennis 64 on Switch and be like, yo, I'll just play this game for, like, it's my most played game of the new games from Nintendo Switch Online. But yeah, the Switch Online stuff, we'll get back to that in a little bit. But to start off the show, or I guess this after a cold open, so to speak, I've been playing some of a hot new Switch game. It's called Yoshi's Story. It's called Shin Megami Tensei 5. It is coming out in November. I think November 11th is the exact date. But Donald and I are working on the review. That's going to go up, I don't know if we can say, sometime before launch. But the preview embargo went up, and the preview embargo is hilarious because we could not capture any video. We could capture some screenshots, and we could talk about roughly the first 45 minutes to an hour of the video game. So I'm not going to go into any real specifics about Shin Megami Tensei 5, other than for fans of the series, you could probably go be happy. That's it. Done. Segment over. Yeah. But I did kind of go into this game with a little bit of trepidation, as talked about on the show over the past couple months. I guess it was more like earlier this year. I've kind of fallen off with a lot of Atlus games. After legitimately, Atlus was one of my favorite publishers for a stretch there in like the DS, 3DS era. And part of it's because I just don't really like Persona as much as everybody else. And I felt like there was a point, like late 3DS era, where Atlus just became the Persona publisher. And Catherine. And Catherine sucks for a lot of reasons, most of which are summed up in Matt Swadniak's review of the Switch release. And I just had doubts about what Atlus as a developer could do. I like Tokyo Mirage Sessions. And then, you know, kind of workshopped the concept of the Atlus line when we were talking about Xenoblade Chronicles 2, which is not an Atlus game, but I think suffers from some of the issues that I have with other Atlus games. And Shin Megami Tensei 5 was a game that I was nervous about because I was worried that it was going to be like way too Persona-y. And I can kind of tell by what some of the people have been talking about from the previews, where they're just like, well, it looks like Persona, but it don't have the school stuff, and it's not a visual novel, and blah, 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 blah. And people very much want Shin Megami Tensei to be a Persona game, when it's not. It's the series that spawned Persona. Persona is the spinoff, damn it. Even though we're probably like an entry away or two from like Shin Megami Tensei 6 being called like Persona : Shin Megami Tensei 6. But
ouch.
It's probably going to happen because I do think that there's something about Mega Ten games that, like, there's a lot of similarities in how Persona works and how Shin Megami Tensei works. But there's enough differences that for me, like as someone who doesn't like Persona as much, oh, I love the Mega Ten games. And 5 has really been no different in that regard. Like the premise is usually like some dark shit is happening in Tokyo. Something goes on, and this time I checked, I can say this, and I think it's like in like the reveal trailer for shit's sake, you're just like a teenage high school kid, and so like they are being like, oh, you're gonna make relationships and everything, and no, like Tokyo is fucked, everybody's dead. And then you fuse with a demon and you have long blue hair and you run around and shit, and it's great. But you do go from starting off in Tokyo, and then like you try to go home after the school day, and then like you just wind up in a desert. There's some story stuff that I'm not sure of how much I can say, but there's, as far as what the hell happened, because you basically just like go through a tunnel, and then you're in this like deserted wasteland that could be Tokyo. Who knows? It's in ruins. And then you go around, and that's when the kind of meat of the game, which is a little bit more like open worldy RPG than like Shin Megami Tensei 4 on 3DS was. It definitely is pushing the Switch to its limits. It doesn't, you know, like they're doing what they can. This is a game that was announced in what, 2017, and is now coming out in 2021. And this is also like the first major Atlus project on Unreal Engine. So there are some things where like they're probably getting around some, there's probably some learning curves there. And I think playing it on the OLED, there I've definitely been impressed by the visuals, but I've played it on the TV a little bit. And like, if I didn't have like the, wow, look at the shiny new screen thing, like this game looks fine. I haven't really run into any kind of slowdown, but it doesn't look like the most prettiest game in the whole world. But I haven't noticed any frame rate drops, no slowdown. It runs all right. But you are like, it's, you know, it's, you're exploring the world. There's like Korok seed like creatures to find, which just makes me laugh because I just love how much of a trope this is. And it is the same thing where like you get like incrementally, like as you collect more, it seems like the rewards like thin out more, much like the Korok seeds, where the Korok seeds are a thing inherently designed so that way you don't need to collect them all, because you basically get, you like, I think it's something like you can get what, like 50% of the Korok seeds and you get like 80% of the rewards for it, because once again, Korok seeds inherently designed because you're not supposed to collect them all. And it's,
yep,
I will say that is a little bit of a misread on it's a consistent thing that I've noticed with Nintendo developers where they're like, you only need to buy one amiibo for Smash Brothers. Not accounting for that your fans in the West are psychos who need, yep, to do everything. And that's like, you should know that by now. Like there's enough evidence there. You can see by the shortages when they were like, no one's going to buy the Wii Fit Trainer amiibo. And then all of a sudden, like those things are going for $75 online. Like you done fucked up, guys. But back to Shin Megami Tensei 5. It's a turn-based battle system, the press turn system, which I don't know if either you are familiar with that, but the way that works, it's something, I forget the exact origins of it, but it's shown, like, you know, it's in Tokyo Mirage Sessions, for example, but it is when you hit an enemy with their weakness, you'll get another turn, and you, mm-hmm, can basically double the amount of turns that you have, like the actions that you have. With your party, where your party is, you know, you, the demon hybrid high school student thing, and then you also collect a party of demons, where it's kind of Pokemon like that, as you collect your different demons, and you have to do that by negotiating with them. So like when you come across an enemy, you can talk to them, and sometimes they'll just be like, fuck you, I want to eat your heart. And then they'll fight you. Other times they'll be like, ah, you seem all right. Or like you have a couple prompts, and if you answer right, they'll just join you. Or they'll be like, you know, I'll join you, but you need to get me like 300 gold. Or like, let me take a little bit of your magic points. And then maybe they'll join you. And then you can fuse them together to make new demons. If you played a Shin Megami Tensei game, it's pretty par for the course with all of that. But yeah. I do think just like there's a cleanliness to it. The tutorials are good without being overbearing. Like I think the Shin Megami Tensei 4, I remember, was a little bit notorious. Like I think the collector's edition, or like the launch physical edition on 3DS, came with like a strategy guide for like the first couple hours. And I think part of the logic for that was that like the beginning of that game was very, very hard. I think there's definitely, I don't think I can even talk about the choke point that I ran into, but I'll just, like, it does get difficult. You can change your difficulty settings at any time, as long as you don't pick hard from the start, in which case you're locked into that. Mm. But you can go between casual, I think it's casual and easy, I think are the two that are available, or maybe it's like normal and casual, I forget exactly. But you can bounce between those as you want. It's definitely a lot more friendlier at the start. And then once the world opens up, like that's when it seems like it gets a little harder, and then you have a lot more that you can do to level up and train and find different demons and stuff like that. And they are also adding a third difficulty that is like, I think it's safe, I think is the name of it, which is even easier than easy. That is basically like, if you just want to romp around and see the story and collect the demons, that's the way to go, which I just think it's good to have. Like, there is part of it where, you know, the brutality of Shin Megami Tensei 5, just the series in general, is important. But it's nice to have that other way, because I know from playing the games myself and talking to other people who played past games in this series that you can hit a brick wall and it can just suck.
Yeah.
And if you don't have the drive to get through that, or if you're not as familiar with the series, it might be tough. And I think having these difficulty settings allows you to still keep up some of that brutality for people that have like played every game to 100%, and then also still have it be a little more welcoming to newcomers, which I do think that Mega Ten 5 is way more welcoming to newcomers than maybe any entering the series has been, because it is like the plot's not as important. Like, it definitely does have a lot of like grandstanding about like gods and demons and shit like that. But like, if this is how I'm playing this game, which is I'm romping it through for getting the demons, the good turn-based battles, exploring the world that you can, because it is actually kind of fun to explore nooks and crannies and everything. And there's a lot of side quests that come up, different things you can do. And I can't talk about much else other than that because the preview embargo is very limiting. But I think by next episode, I'll be able to talk about it more.
Cool.
Yeah.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I've only really played a little bit of Persona 5. And the loop in that game is you have your real life with like the social aspects, and then you jump into dungeons. What is the loop like with Shin Megami Tensei 5, where it seems like you're just kind of constantly exploring?
It is. So I'll speak to specifically to this game. From what I can talk about, and by talking about what I can talk about, you can extrapolate it to what comes after.
Sure.
You basically have like a story quest marker that it's like, oh, like go here next.
Yeah.
So you can kind of go in that direction, but then you can also explore around it.
Gotcha.
And it does get a little more complicated than that, but like it's not so much of the like, yeah, go into a dungeon, then emerge out of the dungeon and go to another dungeon and go into that dungeon. Like, this is very much like you are exploring like this fucked up version of Tokyo that's covered in sand or whatever.
Yeah.
And it also there's save points that have fast travel. So you can kind of zoom around the map, which makes doing some of the side quests a little easier because you can get around pretty quickly. The enemies are all in the overworld. You can like hit them to, you know, get a jump on the attack and stuff.
Sure.
I really like the loop of that game because it's Pokemon like.
Yeah.
And I know it's the one thing that I always what I liked about Yo-Kai Watch is that like Pokemon is very much like Dragon Quest in that form. Like I mean, if you look at the original Game Boy Pokemon game, like you could just be like, look, it's a Dragon Quest game. Because that's how it's designed. Whereas Yo-Kai Watch was always like, let's take that Pokemon thing, but it's like Shin Megami Tensei more, because it is, you know, like you can make the Pokemon comparison here, but it's a little bit different because it's not like you're necessarily catching them. You have to convince them to be part of your team, and then you fuse them together to make new demons. Yeah, I think that Shin Megami Tensei 5 is very promising. I'm very happy with it so far, and I think if you've been looking forward to it or you've been on the fence with it, things are looking good.
Cool.
All right, so let's move on to talking about the main act, so to speak, of the things we can talk about unfettered. So Nintendo Switch Online became the Nintendo Switch Online Plus Expansion Pack. And while we don't have the Animal Crossing DLC yet, we do have access to Nintendo 64 games, 9 of them, and Sega Genesis games, think, but like 10 to 12. I forget the exact count of Genesis games. The Nintendo 64 games have kind of been the biggest focus. John, you've been digging into some of the emulation with the N64 games. So where are you at with those?
So the good news is something that I wasn't expecting. All the N64 games output at 720p, which is the same as what Mario 64 ran at on the Super Mario 3D All-Stars collection. It is cool because even on the Wii U, which was an HD system, the Virtual Console was still stuck at 480. So it's the highest resolution kind of retro releases Nintendo has done outside of that Mario 64 release 3D on All-Stars. 3D All-Stars. Yeah. So that's neat. And especially when you're playing handheld, that it means they actually run at the native resolution of handheld mode. So they look super sharp.
They all look really good on Switch. Or yeah. Like on the Switch itself. Like especially the OLED screen. Like it looks great.
Yeah. The one caveat is if you dock the Switch, they still run at 720, but when it puts it in like the 1080p shell to put it on your TV, it doesn't quite scale the image equally. Every so often, one pixel will become like two pixels that are just duplicated. And so like if you're looking at like a slanting line, occasionally it'll have like an extra big stair step, which it's not a huge issue. The NES Classic had the same problem. But it's kind of a weird bug that, you know, hopefully gets patched, but it's not the biggest bug in the emulation for this thing. Overall, like most of these games emulate pretty well. There are some frame pacing issues where, while most of these games are 30 frames per second, occasionally those frames won't be equally spaced across the second. And so like, you'll get I think at 30 frames per second, frames ought to be like 33 milliseconds apart. And you'll occasionally get two that are closer together than that. And so you'll kind of feel like a little jerk in the motion, even though you're not actually losing any frames or seeing any slowdown. If that's the type of thing that you're sensitive to. But the biggest thing is Ocarina of Time is like weirdly has a lot happening and going wrong with it while every other game seems to be totally fine. So I'm not really sure what happened to Ocarina of Time.
Yeah, that's bizarre because these are not all separate emulators. These are all this like everything's yeah, running the same, in the same.
Yeah,
it's all the same emulator. And we have seen like Nintendo has run into trouble with the Zelda 3D engine is, I guess, what it's colloquially called before. On the Wii and Wii U Virtual Console. Yeah, and I think it all comes from Mario 64.
Yeah.
Like that engine kind of.
Yeah, Mario 64, kind of the foundation of that, but funneled into like every Nintendo 64 game. Like, and the connection between Star Fox 64 and Ocarina of Time is the debug thing where you can bring the Star Fox, the R-Wing in.
Yep.
I think it's because it's all in the same space.
Yeah, that engine has a core, like a lineage across a lot of first party Nintendo stuff. But weirdly, Zelda seems to have been more of a problem for emulating. And so Zelda on the Nintendo Switch Online service has a lot of the same issues that especially the Wii U version had on Virtual Console, which manifests in textures not displaying correctly. And the best example that you've probably seen floating around on Twitter is in the water temple when you go to the Shadow Link mini boss room. The water is supposed to be translucent so that you can see like a reflection of the room underneath it. And that's how they reveal Shadow Link, and it's neat. In both the Wii U and Switch version, that's broken, so the water is opaque and you can't see through it, which kind of defeats the purpose of that room. But then the other weird thing going on in the Switch version is the distance fog seems to be like spread out. The way fog works in N64 games is it's a calculation based on how far you are from the player camera. So there will be a point set for where fog starts in relation to the camera and a point set for where fog becomes completely opaque in relation to the camera. And it seems like in this particular version of Zelda, those values have been spread out. So the fog both starts closer to you, but like the distance for when it becomes opaque is way farther out. And so one area where I actually saw this like really obviously in Ocarina of Time, a lot of people have been sharing Kokiri Forest, but after you do the Deku Tree, he gives you like the history of Hyrule and shows you like a creation of Hyrule by the goddesses cutscene.
Classic. And
in that cutscene, you're like seeing areas like form And they form out of this fog. Like, that's how they kind of do the creation of the world effect. But because the fog effect is broken, like, you can just kind of see the world, like, just drawing in, because there's no fog effect there. Or the fog, it's there, but it's not scaled correctly.
I kind of want to see this now.
it's weird, and it's, you know, on the one hand, like, as someone who enjoys learning about, you know, how these games are built, it is kind of interesting to be able to see the world without that fog hiding the distant geometry they're using. Mm-hmm. But, like, it looks objectively worse.
Yeah.
So it is worth noting that, like, none of that affects gameplay. Like it still runs fine. It's totally playable. Yeah, I guess, like,
the Shadow Link reveal is muted.
Yeah.
But other than that, yeah, like it seems like it plays fine otherwise. I actually haven't touched Ocarina of Time yet.
Yeah.
I did see that there was a really bad input lag. Is that a confirmed problem?
That was the thing I was going to mention. The input latency, there's been a lot of people talking about that. And there definitely is some input latency on here. I will point out something that I always think is funny whenever I see people talking about input latency is, like, with a few exceptions, none of you noticed this before people started saying it was there.
Sure.
People talk a lot about input latency when they can't tell there's an input latency problem.
And I also feel like, unless you're at the level, which I know a lot of the Zelda stuff came from a prominent speedrunner going through the Switch Online version, unless you are that intimately familiar with the game, like, or you're just a Berube, then you're not going to necessarily, like, I played pretty much all of these Nintendo 64 games a lot in my youth, played a bunch of them on Wii and Wii U Virtual Console probably as well. For my time with it, I've noticed no input latency with any. I think the only two games I haven't played at this point from the N64 lineup are Ocarina and Mario 64. They've all just played fine.
I will say Ocarina is the one where I don't know if I would. I heard the input latency stuff before I tried Ocarina, so it's impossible for me to say if I would have noticed it.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I can feel it in Ocarina of Time, in all fairness. And I know Xander was helping me get footage for a video, which should be out already by the time you're listening to this. And I think he wound up just completing Mario 64 on accident when I asked for, like, 10 minutes of footage. But he said that he could kind of feel it in there. So
what about Star Fox 64? Because that's a game that you're pretty...
Star Fox 64 I haven't had an issue with.
Okay.
And that seems like Star Fox 64, weirdly, is, like, the best version of that game that Nintendo has put out. That's the original.
That's what's so weird about the Zelda thing is, like, it's, well, that was a remake.
Yeah, that was legitimately a whole new game.
Yeah.
It's also, I'm not comparing Ocarina of Time on N64 to the 3DS version.
I just wanted to give Star Fox 64 3D a shout out because it needs more love.
Because it's great.
Yeah.
But yeah, the one other thing I will say about the input latency is, just to put that in context, because I think it gets, like, people like, oh, unplayable. The input latency on average amounts to about 3 frames. Once again, these games are 30 frames per second, which means that between the time that you push a button and you see the action on screen, there is 1/10 of a second passing by. Not a big gap.
Unless you're playing Rock Band, like, it's hard to notice.
Yeah, in most instances, it will not affect you. But there are, like, I'm not trying to say, if you're sensitive to input latency, like, I'm not saying it's not there.
We hear you, Justin.
Just to quell the people who are, like, concerned that it's a major issue, it's not, like, if you want to see major input latency issues, go play the Sega Genesis collection, not the Switch Online one, but the one that actually got released. Holy crap, is that input latency bad.
Yeah, that was a very bad port of largely good games. Humorously, From what I've heard and from what I've played, the Genesis games on Nintendo Switch Online all, like, run wonderfully.
That's good.
Like, zero issue.
Yeah. I've been so caught up with the N64 stuff, I've barely had time to even look at the Genesis stuff.
The Genesis stuff seems very comparable to, like, the SNES stuff. Just seems to just work. That's very nicely.
You would expect. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. Do we know who handled the emulation for the Genesis stuff? Like, do we know what the backstory is on that at all?
I don't know. I don't know if M2 was involved or if it was it might be NERD, because I think NERD did all the, I think they did everything else for Switch Online.
Okay.
Genesis stuff runs fine, and if you are someone who dipped into the expansion pack and you're kind of bummed out by the N64 games, like, seriously, go check out some of those Genesis games. There's a lot of great stuff there if you're not as familiar with the system. Definitely games that, like, you've probably never played or heard of that are very good. Like, I never actually played Musha before this, and that's a pretty dope-ass shoot-em-up. Like, Gunstar Heroes is absolutely incredible. And tying into Gen 64, outside of the controls being a little awkward to adjust to, use the D-pad to control. Pro tip. Sin and Punishment is another game by Treasure, who also developed Gunstar Heroes on Genesis. Play Sin and Punishment. It's very good.
I'm excited I got Xander to play that last night when he was helping me record footage, and he seems to have liked it. So
that's very
amazing very alarm clock.
That's
we talked about that in the intro to that game. Like, that game is super low poly. All of the characters look terrible, but there's this alarm clock in the opening cutscene that's like the highest poly model in any N64 game, and it's so weird. It looks great.
Yeah, it's like the first thing they show you, and then you, like, you see Saki.
And then it pans up and you see people.
Yeah.
What happened?
And you're just like, huh.
The whole budget went to that alarm clock.
Yeah. Yep.
But, yeah, I mean, like, the Genesis lineup is really strong. You have Castlevania Bloodlines and Contra Hardcore, which both are already on Switch in the Castlevania and Contra collections that came out a couple years ago. But, like, Bloodlines is awesome. Hardcore is incredible. You can play as, like, a little robot or a wolf dog. Like, it's great. Gunstar Heroes, I already mentioned that. Streets of Rage 2 is a very good beat 'em up. There's already a lot of Puyo on Switch and Switch Online, but Dr. Robotnik's Mean Bean Machine is there, and that's great. Shining Force, good strategy RPG. If you're a Fire Emblem bro, go check out some Shining Force. Phantasy Star 4, which, if you are lamenting the fact that there are no Final Fantasy games on Nintendo Switch Online, go shut your mouth and go play Phantasy Star 4. That is an extremely good RPG that I hope to actually beat on Nintendo Switch Online. But, like, just a really good assortment of games. And there's more that are going to come. And with the N64 stuff, like, hopefully some of the emulation quirks get cleaned up. Like, I hope Ocarina gets fixed, because that's just a real bummer.
Yeah,
it is. I mean, it's kind of one of the biggest games on that list. So it's crazy that it would be in this state. It feels like they must have run out of time. Like, and it also, with Majora's Mask coming out, they better fix the engine's problems with Ocarina of Time. Because, Majora's Mask is going to have all those things. Though, yep. I guess in Majora's Mask, because it had the expansion pack without a C, it... didn't use fog as much, so at least there's that. But, like, all those, that texture issue is still gonna be there, just like it was on Wii and Wii U.
Yeah, and there's some other disappointments with the N64. Like, I know there are plenty of people who wish they had there was a CRT filter. There's no rewind, there's no
the rewind, I don't know, John, I talk to people about the rewind stuff. Doing rewind for Nintendo 64 is, like, I don't want to say impossible, but it is, like, infinitely more complicated than doing it for Genesis, Super Nintendo, or NES.
And this is actually, like, more from talking to Matt about it too. It sounds like the way that rewind works is essentially the game is making a ton of tiny save states all the time. And doing that saving state on a N64 game is a much more demanding space consuming thing than saving your state on, like, an NES game. So it's just not as
a difference plausible. In hundreds of kilobytes, probably.
Right. Yeah. And that stacks up when you're saving, you know, one every second, like they are for the other systems.
I mean, maybe a way forward for that. If that's the way they're doing it on Switch Online, just have it where you have fewer save states. Like, I forget how far back the save states on the other systems go, but let's say it's, you have, you know, 20 save states over a minute. Maybe you have 5 over a minute on it.
Yeah, you could spread them out.
But there's also no button remapping or manuals, which is the issue.
Garbage.
But, yeah, I agree that it would be nice. but also it wasn't in any of the other systems either.
Yeah.
But you could feel it a lot more in the N64 because button remapping, you know, with the SNES controller or the NES controller, they're either simple enough or comparable enough to where you don't feel the difference as much. With an N64 controller, that entire setup is so alien to what modern controllers are today. And so no button remapping, you really feel it.
Yeah, I guess I just disagree, but I don't disagree that it would like be nice. I haven't played any of those games and felt like I want to remap the buttons.
Gotcha.
If that makes sense.
It's not a big issue in Mario Tennis, which is the most important game on that list.
Yeah, Mario Tennis rules. Best Mario Tennis game.
I did want to mention the on the CRT filter thing. I kind of get what I assume Nintendo's logic was that because the CRT filter is not like a technical limitation or anything. Like all they're doing is putting a PNG of some lines over the game. but like it's a shitty CRT filter. It's terrible. But I think the difference is that, you know, on an SNES game, it's running at its original resolution, and that CRT filter smooths out those pixels. If they were running these N64 games at 240p, which is what they would have originally run at, then yeah, 100% put a CRT filter on it.
I get what you
mean.
But
they're rendering at 720, and so a CRT filter wouldn't do anything. Ultimately, if you created a CRT filter that was accurate to a 720p resolution, the screen would just look dim. You wouldn't even be able to see the lines anymore. And if you didn't make it accurate to 720, then it would look weird because there would be multiple lines of pixels between every CRT line. So I get why Nintendo chose to do it this way, and I think I agree with them. If they were to do a CRT filter, I would want an option to switch the resolution back to 240p. But I'd rather have it at 720 because this isn't pixel art for most of these games. It's 3D, so you just up the resolution.
Yeah, personally, that's never been an issue, but I know that there are a lot of people who just like had the expectation that it would be there because it was on the other emulators on NSO. And it does seem weird that there isn't at least an option, even if it's not as good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that that's a question that I raised just in the end of our Slack was, you know, yes, these games originally released on at a time where you would be playing them on a CRT, but so did GameCube games. And I don't think if GameCube released at 720p, we would be talking about needing a CRT filter for those.
Agreed. Sure.
In fact, I know we didn't because they put out Sunshine and we all thought it looked incredible.
It did look incredible.
So, yeah, I think it's just N64
look,
is a...
someone has to represent CRT? Matt's opinions here.
Okay. CRT filters, I 100% agree that CRT filters are an absolute must-have option for pixel art-based games. And you know what? Yoshi's Story and Dr. Mario are both sprite based. So CRT filter for those, sure. But every other game on this, no. Winback looks flawless without a CRT filter. Thank you.
Yoshi's Story looks good on the OLED.
Yeah. Yoshi's Story looks great on everything.
Yeah. Love that game. But all right, let's do Winback talk. So I was a person who played Winback back in the day and had fond memories of it, but did not know if it would hold up. John, you just played Winback this week. How do you feel?
It holds up like so crazy. Like when I asked you about it, you had mentioned that, you know, yeah, it's like pretty influential for third person shooters, but like, I didn't realize that it invented everything. Like it
inspired RE4. Like that's
right. Well, yeah, it's like I went and looked up because I was like, I'm like, I don't want to like give this credit for everything and then like have it be like, oh, some other game did it first. But like I'm looking it up and like, yeah, it's directly credited for like Gears of War, Resident Evil 4, which then, you know, that stuff is, you know, Uncharted, Mass Effect, like any third person cover shooter. All of the mechanics, and not just like, oh, it's third person, you can duck, but no, like sticking to cover and like pushing a button to lean out around the cover, having like short and high cover, and like all of that, literally all of it is from this game, and it plays really well. And I don't understand, like I honestly wonder if like this is one of those things where like there was a, I don't know what the subtitle was, but one of the Alien games on, I think, PS1 when it came out, we used the DualShock controller and was the first game to ever have what we now consider traditional dual stick first person shooter controls. And at the time, everybody was like, these controls are just unusable. Like, this is the most idiotic idea anyone ever had for controls. But now we look back on it and we're like, wow, they invented the best control scheme for this. And I kind of feel like I wonder if Winback is kind of like that, where I can look at it now and play it and it makes total sense and it plays great. But at the time when there was nothing else like this, I could see playing it and just having it make no sense whatsoever. Because like there's like I play it and I'm like, yeah, I get this. Like it's intuitive. I've played a ton of games like this. But at the time there was like nothing to compare it to. And so honestly, I think it might play better now than it did when it came out, which is so weird. But yeah, I'm having a really good time with it. Also, you work for SCAT. Why are there multiple video games where you work for SCAT? Like, why do people
keep... Is this in the SCAT universe?
It's like, yeah, some extended SCAT universe. Why do people use that as an acronym in video games so much? Because there, it comes up a lot.
Did this have a localization team? Or was this just like...
Yo, it's Biomegaforce.
Yeah, it's in English. You're a very traditionally American named character named Jean-Luc Cougar.
Jean-Luc Cougar.
Yes. Okay. Which, like, holy shit. Like, everybody else on your team is like Steve, Dan, Mike, Jean-Luc Cougar, and Susan. It's so, like, it's incredible.
And I just love, I'm actually now looking at, so Megaforce made this. They made all the Warriors games, and like they do, you know, Hyrule Warriors and stuff. I don't know if they've ever made anything other than Warriors games.
Like, it's a shame.
They made Winback. I don't think they ever made another third person shooter again.
I can't wait for Winback Warriors.
Oh my god, do it.
There was a second Winback game.
They didn't make it.
But they didn't make it.
And apparently it's an unrelated story.
Yes. Does it play like the first one? Do we need to have a Winback game club?
There's a chance after Dynasty Warriors that maybe Dynasty Warriors doesn't take off and Winback does. And then we have Hyrule Winback.
God. What a different, more wonderful universe that would be.
That's just Link's crossbow training.
Which is great.
Yeah, it's very good.
It is very good.
Winback 2 actually looks very nice, actually.
I think it's not supposed to be good.
Okay. The Winback, like, looks pretty good as an N64 game.
Yeah. Was it meant to be like an MGS, like, rival?
It apparently inspired MGS 2.
Oh. Okay.
The cover system, I think, basically originated with this game.
Yeah. The cover system of video games. Like, not just of, like, Metal Gear Solid 2, but just cover systems in games. The only other thing you can credit before this is Space Invaders. Like, like how is this not, like, a legendary game?
Ocarina of Time created Z-targeting. Winback created cover-based shooting.
And John Cougar.
I mean, cover-based shooting is almost as prevalent as Z targeting.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
There's even a dodge roll, so it also made Dark Souls.
I mean, it also has the laser sight, and I don't know if it's necessarily the first game to ever have a laser sight.
It feels a lot like Resident Evil though. Yeah.
Yeah, but like it is something like that laser sight mechanic, like there's a straight line from this to Resident Evil 4.
Yeah. Oh, 100. Yeah, it just feels like Resident Evil 4. And it's crazy.
What are you winning back in the game?
Liberty.
Okay.
For maybe America, I guess. I don't know. The game starts and you're in a helicopter with your team. And then the helicopter explodes and you're like planning to infiltrate some base. And then the helicopter shakes a bunch. Everybody jumps out and it blows up. And you don't know where anybody else is. And so you start going through this base, shooting dudes. And it's fantastic.
That sounds solid.
I'm going to keep playing it. Like, I kind of want to finish it. Especially since, like, save states make it so, like, I mean, it has, like, a decent checkpoint system, but, like, save states make it pretty easy to just, like, anytime I get through a tough area, I just save state. The one problem with the Nintendo Switch Online version is this game saved to memory cards, and Nintendo Switch Online does not support memory cards. So the only way to save your game is via save states.
Bonkers, because I don't think it's like that short of a game.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, it's 14 hours.
Yeah.
On how long to beat?
And it makes sense. Like me and Matt were talking about it, where I think what it is that like on N64, if you wanted to have a Rumble Pack, then when you needed to save, you would take out the Rumble Pack and put in your memory card. And I don't think the emulator knows how to intelligently switch between those as needed, which makes sense. Like that would be a hard thing to figure out. But a toggle would be nice. So yeah, I'm not sure if it's not the perfect way to play Winback. It feels like this would play better on the Switch controller than it would have on an N64 controller. So I do think it's a really good way to play it. But if you're like me and you haven't played it at all, this game is secretly great and you should play it. Which, like you and me have said before, Neil, like this is the kind of thing that is my favorite part of the NSO service.
Yeah, like we made fun of Jelly Boy.
Yeah.
But Jelly Boy was kind of neat.
Yeah. This is dare I say, Winback may be better than Jelly Boy.
I don't know if that's a hot take.
I don't either.
But you said it strongly, so it sounded like one.
Yeah. Yeah. Somewhere, some Jelly Boy fan is like, who fucking dares?
Fucking Omega Force, what have they ever done? But yeah, no, I mean, I'm looking forward to, I get my N64 controller and my Genesis controller that I probably shouldn't have gotten, because like, why did I do that? But I have both of them, and they're coming in, should be getting them by the time of recording. Definitely looking forward to using the N64 controller, especially for Sin and Punishment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
While I did adapt to like the weird control schemes that they have, like I'll just use the N64 controller and not have to deal with anything weird.
Would it be funny as if them changing the control scheme for Sin and Punishment also remapped it on the N64 controller so that just doesn't work? That would be very Nintendo of them.
But I do like having that wireless N64 controller that can work with the Switch. Like that seems like it's going to be fun, and I'm looking forward to them adding new games. Like just looking at what's ahead, I hope they figure out the crap with 3D Zelda, because I really want to play Majora's Mask 64. I've never played that all the way through. Like I'll mess around with Banjo-Kazooie. Portably. That's the cool part about that. Paper Mario, Pokemon Snap, F-Zero X. It's a good lineup, and hopefully some of the emulation stuff gets cleaned up. But I think even without that, like I can play them portably. Like that's the important thing to me. That matters more than perfect emulation, for better or worse.
Right. I think I fall on the same line, where it's just the convenience and the portability is just really, really nice. And I get it if you are upset about the quality of the emulation or of the lack of value, but I've been enjoying it. I'm not sure if I'll renew my subscription. I'll just keep an eye on it. But I hope Banjo-Kazooie runs fine, because I've never played that game and I've only heard good things. So
that'll be a fun one to do comparisons for.
Yeah,
because we can do like N64 versus Xbox 360 versus Xbox One versus Xbox Series X versus Game Pass Switch. Streaming versus Switch. Like there's so many ways to play Banjo-Kazooie. It's weirdly everywhere.
But I think that's an episode of connectivity. Thank you, Alex and John, for bearing with everything.
Yeah, the people listening have no idea how many technical issues have happened in this episode.
Whatever technical difficulties there were with the N64 emulation, probably not as much with this episode. No.
Yeah, Zelda Ocarina of Time on Switch runs way better than Zencaster has throughout this recording process. I can say that much. Jesus.
But that's going to do it for Connectivity 296. Shit, we have 4 episodes until 300.
Yep.
We should probably do some planning, fellas.
I assume 400 maybe will be our Winback Game Club episode.
Yeah.
300.
400, 300. I don't know what number
we
I said.
We can save it for 400. That'll give me more time to play it.
That's going to do us. Thank you. Thank you, Alex and John. And we'll see y'all next week. See you back on the Winback.
Bye.
Bye. We'll be right back.
This was made possible by our generous supporters on Patreon. Check out patreon.com/NWR for all the details.
We should get some online play going. I know. Did you both of you guys participate in some online and Nintendo 64 and Nintendo Switch online play?
Yeah, very briefly with each other. Well, John is out, so we should probably try to get him back on. considering he played with me. Where did he go?
All right, so that was at like 4 minutes when he left. I'm seeing if he.
Yeah. Oh, he's typing. Zencastr just crashed.
Oh no. He could still hear us.
Oh, there he is. Bang.